Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting the 18 that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. For Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Still here, still talking. We just warmed up. We just went through our exercises. 35 minutes of linguistic flexing from myself and Wei Ting chatting G1, some thoughts on TNA Slammiversary. Real American Freestyle landing a big streaming deal. We're thinking of sending Brandon from New Jersey to Cleveland to cover that for us.
I think he'd do a great job.
Oh, man. Yeah. Maybe Brandon we should assign to go do a deep dive on Fox Nation programming and then report back to us. Tell us about this new streaming platform for wrestling.
I can only imagine what that would sound like. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's on Dan Bongino duty.
Oh boy, he's probably chuckling. I could hear the laugh just that right now.
Okay, well, folks, no time for laughter. No time for Dan Bongino jokes. We've got Post Wrestling is just roaring, okay? This past weekend, folks, if you're a member of the Post Wrestling Cafe, boy, did you hit the jackpot this month, because over the weekend, we dropped the first of many G1 Climax shows, Bruce Lord and Kieran Peterson going through 19 matches to kick off the tournament, plus Cafe exclusive coverage of UFC 318 with Eric Marcotte and Jack Wannon, a Slammiversary review with myself and Jack, and don't worry, folks, we've still got the free listeners covered, because the NWA crew, they looked at All in Texas. They looked at that pay-per-view runtime and they said, hold our beer. And they brought out a 6-hour, 8-minute extravaganza on Sunday night, up now for everybody to devour. There's a reason we do the show once a month, because you've got to pace yourselves. And by the time you're ready, they're ready to go too for their next month's show.
Yeah, yeah. Apologies. This was not uploaded until like noon. I just can't stay up till they finish to upload the show, so that this is the reason why.
Understood, Wei. You've got a lot on your shoulders, so we appreciate it nonetheless. So all of that up on the Post Wrestling Cafe and here on the YouTube channel from the past weekend. G1 shows this week, Wednesday, Wei Ting and Kate from Montreal will have a show, again, for Cafe members. Friday, it's myself and Eric Marcotte, and then Sunday, Kieran Peterson and WH Park. So they have got their hand on the wheel this coming weekend for all the G1 action.
Yeah. That first review with Kieran and Bruce is actually available for free in the Post Wrestling Cafe free tier for all of you guys who subscribe to it. You don't necessarily have to subscribe to any of our paid tiers. Sign up to the free tier and you can get occasional freebies like the first weekend review from Kieran and Bruce.
And again, you jump onto the cafe today, it will get you through the entirety of the G1. So you get 30 days access, and if that's all you want to check out, it will cover you throughout the finals of the G1. $6 a month for all the bonus shows, including Rewind Away, which will be coming out this Thursday for the best of the WWF Volume 16. I didn't have any reaction to this when this was chosen, but when I sat down to watch this over the weekend, this is one of the most insane VHS releases WWF has put out. I have never seen this in my life. I'm not even going to talk about it until Wei has had a chance to see it. Wei has been warned about one particular scene. This is something else. And there is a match that I am going to venture to guess is going to be 5 stars from Waiting. That's my prediction in advance. Okay. And you will know it way as soon as you see it. This was whoever put this tape together. I have so many questions. I have so many thoughts. If you ever had wanted to see Tatsumi Fujinami on a WWF 1988 VHS release with Japanese commentary, this is for you, not to mention Mean Gene Okerlund's tour of Japan. Let's see how non-offensive it is.
I don't see this one making it to Netflix anytime soon.
This one is definitely not going to be on Netflix. This is for thank you, Internet Archive.
This one's a bit hard to find for most people, so you're going to have to. John, are you putting a feedback thread up?
I will be.
Okay, so once John does that, you can find a link to it at forum.postwrestling.com. If you go to the Internet Archive, you might be able to find that as well. Yeah.
All right. Tonight, we are getting to Raw from a sold-out Toyota Center in Houston, Texas. The last number from WrestleTix, 13,406. And starting off the show, the Judgment Day arrive. And we've got valet parking at the Toyota Center with our valet. As John Kleinchester so eloquently put it in his report, Valet J Styles, as he is hoping that Dominic is cleared tonight. And we got the full gamut of Uncle AJ on this show in many, many disguises, many costumes. All I can say is that I had whiplash from seeing AJ, the returning franchise star of TNA the night before, to our first visual. He's a valet driver here at the Toyota Center, but quite the contrast we had on back-to-back nights.
He's kind of working two different characters. You know, we now know he's a man of many, many looks.
I mean, listen, it certainly is very, very different, but AJ has been generally pretty entertaining in this role for a program that this has been all the buildup they have had is just AJ messing with this guy. And, well, we will get to the culmination of this whole doctor's note tonight. CM Punk starts the show, and he is focused on Gunther, one of the best in the world, and he puts up my hand to God. He vows on every Netflix subscriber that he will leave it all in the ring at SummerSlam. I only have 2 weeks to prepare because we have had no time to promote this pay-per-view, but I've trained my entire life for this. So Gunther interrupts him. He just has this long stare down, and I don't know if maybe Gunther was just waiting for this crowd to erupt. It never came, and this is not the greatest of crowds, and of all people, it was Io Sky and Stephanie Vaquer to me that woke them up, but that was a very late portion into the show. So Gunther just gets into his promo. He says that they are not here to create drama. Neither of us are here to make friends. We're here to make money and win belts, and both of us have large egos, but the difference is mine is justified. Yours is based on fans chanting your name. Mine is about results. And he said at SummerSlam, I'm going to maul you. I'm going to choke you out and drop you like a wet towel. And you will never be a world champion or the best in the world. All you'll have are these degenerates chanting for you for the rest of your life. And Gunther left. And Punk was speechless. He had nothing. Not even a freestyle rap. He just stared into the blank Houston skyline. And that was it. That was our CM Punk promo for the night.
Well, you got to say something for the next week, right?
Yeah, because we have a whole one Raw until one SummerSlam. So yeah, we got next week under one roof.
I would assume.
Or do we get a contract signing? Or do we get a face to face? What are we gonna have next?
Everything at the same time. Yeah, I thought it resulted in a very strong promo from Gunther as usual. You know, suddenly I realized. I mean, I think the appeal of a Gunther versus CM Punk feud, which I think at some point might have been the rumored WrestleMania direction this year, the appeal of it isn't necessarily so much for me to see what Punk has to say about Gunther. Now it's about what Gunther has to say about Punk, because I enjoy Gunther's promos just as much as I do Phil Brooks. And I thought Gunther put a lot of thought into the promo, but somehow made it very simple. Punk says he's the best in the world, but you know, even though that might have been true at one point, these days it might just seem more like a motivational sort of like you can do it type of mindset. Whereas Gunther, you can truly make the case for him being, at least in the WWE world, the best in the world, because he actually has the accolades to back it up. So I think it's a relatively simple story that they can build to in a few weeks, where Punk should be here to try to prove that he is still the best in the world by beating the best in the world.
Maybe we get a freestyle promo from Gunther next week.
God, you got to say that for the Cena feud.
Saxton is backstage with Stephanie Vaquer, and Naomi barges in. She can't pronounce Vaquer's name, and she says that after you win at after I win at SummerSlam, it's going to be the two of us in Paris, and I will do to Vaquer what you couldn't do by beating Io. So see you in Paris, oui, oui. And Michael Cole just calls her insufferable. And
yeah, she's really turning up the personality to, like, you know, 12 here. And I think now she's, like, just free to be as obnoxious as possible. And I'm really enjoying it. I think holding the title has suddenly made her even more confident and has allowed her to dive even deeper into this role. She just, again, it's very cartoonish, but it's, I think, cartoonish in the best way.
Rusev and Sheamus, the rematch from 3 weeks ago. And they had another, like, very hard-hitting match, as you can imagine. Sheamus sends Rusev to the floor, and he climbs to the top, loses his balance. You've never seen a man try to play off of himself so well. He just decides, you know what? I'm going to redo this. And that's what he did, which I usually hate when guys just go back to repeat it. But you couldn't help but be amused by this. He hits a flying clothesline to the floor, which that in and of itself is pretty impressive for a guy at this size. And he just looks into the camera and he just had total fun with it. And by the end of it, it was like, yeah, I lost my balance. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
So Rusev then takes Sheamus as he's posing into the camera for a follow-away slam on the desk. And into the ring we go. Rusev runs into a flying knee. Then Sheamus leaps off the top. And Rusev is pretty far out. And he's got to do like Tai Bo here to try and get the Machka kick across. But connects with Sheamus and puts him into the accolade. And Sheamus finally reaches the rope. And Rusev yells, and I quote, "You stubborn mule! You stubborn mule!" And Sheamus, the stubborn mule, tells him to keep coming. He waves him on. And the turnbuckle gets exposed, but Rusev is the one run into it. Rusev grabs Sheamus's shillelagh, but Sheamus stops him with a brogue kick, and Sheamus wins in 14 minutes, 50 seconds, and now they are one apiece. So I assume this is done and over with now. They can just go their separate ways. We both take a win with us from this feud, and we move on, right?
Sure, why not? Yeah.
I think this is our new Carmelo Andrade.
I guess maybe potentially one of many, but yeah, like, it was a good match. I thought it elicited a strong reaction from this crowd. I don't know if the action quite got to, like, a banger level, but I did feel like at least it reached the level of struggle that they were looking for. And I don't know if this is maybe catching as much as, like, they're hoping it's catching for people, but people know it's a trilogy now, and maybe there'll be a lot more attention for the third one, but... or the fourth one, or the fifth one, or the sixth one, or the seventh one.
Let me ask you this. If you wanted to emphasize how pale Sheamus was, could you have placed a better referee in as the third man?
I don't know if this is actually the picture from tonight. It might have been from the first match. But
okay. Yeah. Well, that's very it's very honest of you.
It's a very tan referee. Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm overthinking this next portion, but they decide to show us the latest trailer for WWE Unreal. And it's the scene from the Royal Rumble where Akira Tozawa is taken out, and Paul Levesque sends Eyeshow Speed to take his place. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's more real than you think. And I'm like, of all the scenes to show, like, one that was so obviously, like, contrived. Like, this is not even like a, we're doing a scene here. It was, like, presented as though this was a legitimate impromptu moment in the Rumble. It's just such a bizarre clip for the concept that you're selling of this series to me.
Right.
Am I overthinking this?
I would say maybe a bit, John. You know, I think their idea is to just show somebody famous and to show maybe a well-remembered moment from the Rumble to tell you that, hey, you're going to get a... somewhat recap and therefore maybe behind the scenes look, but you're right. Like, they probably could have chosen something a little bit more juicy, but then I also think you're getting into, like, the sort of controversy of doing a showing a piece in the middle of your fictitious wrestling show that breaks kayfabe. And I think that
isn't that, like, the selling feature of this show? Like, but how do you do this show? Like, I don't know.
I mean, it's a good question. How do you promote a show that breaks the immersion of the world that you're trying to, you know, sell while at the same time putting it in the body of the fiction? How do you do that? This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Lyra confronts Bailey. So let's get this straight. The Kabuki Warriors, a couple of weeks ago, they went up to Adam Pearce. They said, hey, we want a tag title shot. Pearce said, yeah, you got it. Four-way evolution, no problem. Then on Friday, Charlotte decides, hey, Pearce, we want a tag title shot at a 50,000-seat stadium. No problem. You can have it. Do we have to qualify? No, you got it. So today, Bailey, learning from her predecessors, went to Adam Pearce in the afternoon and said, hey, me and Lyra aren't a team. We're actually kind of feuding and such. Can we have a tag title shot? Yeah, no problem. Lyra is like, doesn't even want this title shot. It's like, why are you doing this, Bailey? I've got shit to do. I can't be bogged down by these tag belts. What game are you playing? And Bailey says, this is just about winning. So we have got a tag title match with Bailey and Lyra challenging Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez in the red hot women's tag division, where, I mean, I can't wait till the rankings are debuted and we can see the depth of this division, because, man, you've never found title shots that are easier to come by.
They pretty much just acknowledge that, like, there are no teams in the division. And if anybody can get a tag team partner together, you can probably have a title shot.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Do you have a pulse?
Yeah, pretty much. So, I thought this was an interesting little twist in, you know, what we thought was an ongoing feud between the two. Bailey's been working this losing streak, and suddenly to just want this tag team with Lyra, I was wondering how it would pay off by the end of the evening, and I don't know if it really did.
I wanted to see that pitch to Adam Pearce. Like, I've been on this losing streak. I've lost every match since WrestleMania. I think I need a title match. Sure thing. No problem.
Her justification was that they never...
No sense.
Her justification was that she was owed one at Mania that she lost because of Becky.
Okay. Well, they're not an expiration on these? Like, that show was in April. New Day, LWO, and American Made was next. So, man, Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro, this was their, like, quarterly television match. So it's like, let's just go out there and show everybody we're, God damn it, we are part of this tag division. And, man, Wilde did this hip toss splash onto Julius, and then del Toro's in with a bottom rope quebrada. Woods clears the ring, and he does the Fargo strut. And then Graves even refers to it as the Fargo strut. And Cole asks if that's a Coen Brothers reference, and Michael Cole, as he sensed his mentions just turning toxic, quickly says, I know you're talking about Jackie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Del Toro hits a poison roll.
If you're Cole, I don't know if you'll ever check your social media. Like, you probably just have a bunch of burner accounts if you do.
Yeah, I mean, I think after the Josh Matthews DM, I think he just swore off social media, probably.
What's that? I don't
you
know.
You can go look it up. It was it was over a decade ago. You know, just, you know, the old thinking you're DMing someone and it ends up being a public tweet.
Ooh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Del Toro hits a poison run onto Brutus, and then Joaquin Wilde hits this amazing sequence, ending with a backslide onto Woods while catching Kingston into like this clutch hold for a double pin. Looked tremendous. Ivy then shoves Wilde off the top. Julius knocks Dragon Lee, who's in the corner, to the floor, and he fights off the Creeds when El Grande Americano appears. And now I realize we skipped over that backstage segment. So Dragon Lee earlier in the night had walked up to El Grande Kaiser and called him inauthentic and mocking luchadors.
Yeah, yeah.
But and they're not even like Kaiser's. Kaiser got to speak, and it was the most ridiculous thing. It's like such high comedy that they have Kaiser.
He's speaking more Spanish than Gable ever did.
Well, it's but it's in his voice, and it's just so distinct. So the Creeds get into El Grande Americano's face. Del Toro hits a springboard tornillo to the floor. Woods is sent out. And as Kingston comes off for a double stomp, misses. And it's Joaquin Wilde stacking Kofi for the pin in 9-19. I was so glad they went with the LWO in this one to just have a fresh team that I think these two against Balor and JD, like that's probably just a TV match, but could be a really entertaining TV match and a fresh one too.
Could be. I don't know if there's much believability or interest, but I mean, as far as like in ring, I thought like Del Toro and Wilde especially, they're really able to take advantage of all the TV time that they have. I mean, I think to get over, you need a little bit more than just that. But in ring, you know, Raw at least tonight showed that, hey, like at least amongst these three, there is actually a decent nucleus to build an actual tag team division around. So we'll see if they can catch a similar momentum that SmackDown took, you know, which took SmackDown a long time, but they eventually have. But like, let's say these three teams, you got Balor and JD and
the War Raiders.
Oh yeah. Those guys do. But then you throw in like, you know, another really hot tag team, maybe move a team from SmackDown over to Raw. Suddenly you might have an interesting tag division.
During the break, Vic Joseph interviewed. Oh, first we had EO with the Kabuki Warriors. We had a damage control reunion here, minus Dakota, and they're all going to be champions again. And Vaquer walks in and says to EO, well, we don't have to wait until Paris for a possible match. And they just agree to have a match later tonight. They're like, okay, sure. Vic interviews Trick Williams, and this was just to tee up the segment with The Undertaker tomorrow. He says that Undertaker's knees had an expiration date. I'm glad your eyes roll in the back of your head because maybe I'm going to knock you out and it's going to be your last ride.
This wasn't on
just during the commercial break. Yeah. So Pierce sends Dominic to go see the medical staff, and Dominic keeps stalling. And Styles is dressed as a janitor and he starts wiping the floor as New Day come in and they're complaining. Nothing makes sense anymore. Pierce killed the tag division. There's two El Grande Americanos. They need to restore order. And then Grayson Waller walks in. And folks, after a year and a half, Grayson Waller and Austin Theory have broken up. Waller says the team is done, and now he wants to be their ace. He wants to be Big G.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do we know if he's actually...
We followed this breakup dude for a year and a half, and this is how it climaxed.
Honestly, like, they're better off, because who wants to see this play out? Like,
play out. Like, we've been watching them have tension for, like, a year and a half. Like,
who wants to see them actually have a feud? Like, I don't...
Well, that's what's next, when this guy's coming back.
I hope not. I hope this is just the last we'll ever speak of, like, their...
No, they did a promo online with Big G, and he just ran down Austin Theory, called him dead weight. I think we're absolutely going to get that feud.
Okay.
It might be a Netflix commercial break feud, but I do feel we're getting a
That's
feud.
That's fine. Yeah, I mean, they've already been doing the storyline already. Like, it feels like Waller has been a third member of the New Day forever.
It feels like this scene was shot 2 months ago when they started doing these three and Theory disappeared.
Uh-huh.
It's like we retroactively did the angle here for what we've been watching for weeks.
It's like they suddenly realize, oh, we never really explained why you're always with the New Day. So maybe let's just do something here. I'm not interested at all in any of this. But, you know, like these, they're all very talented and entertaining characters, performers. Maybe they can turn things around. But it just feels so...
I didn't think this was all that inspiring. Becky Lynch comes out. She says she should be in New York right now for the Happy Gilmore 2 premiere, which is where I believe MJF was on Monday night. They could have had a photo op together. But instead, I'm here in Houston. She puts over a win at Evolution, says that Lyra's been crying for months, and she's taking up all the title shots, and now she wants two belts? Who would do that? And then ties it back to her own double title win at MetLife Stadium, which is where SummerSlam is. Lyra comes out. They explain they're 1-1 in singles matches. They too, like Rusev and Sheamus, are not going to end at two. So Becky says, I made you a star. The trilogy ends at SummerSlam. And when I beat you, you never get the challenge for this title again. So Lyra accepts, but says, there must be a winner. No countouts, no disqualifications. Becky agrees to this. And Becky calls this the biggest women's intercontinental title match ever. All time. Do you think this is the biggest?
Can you name a bigger one?
Man, I'd have to go over the last 6 months, but yeah, this might be it. I mean, technically this will be in front of the most people.
More than Mania? I guess did they have a match?
It wasn't defended at Mania.
Okay.
They did the tag deal.
So then that there's truth to it. Yes.
Becky calls this, the biggest match and offers her hand. Lyra takes it, but hits Becky with the manhandle slam.
Mm-hmm.
It was our Rock Hogan moment from their setup for WrestleMania.
It's interesting to see how they're positioning Lyra here, because I think as we suspected after last week's result, I mean, they're trying to steer Lyra towards a babyface direction here, opposing Becky, but they're trying to still keep the edge that Lyra has, you know, developed as a slight heel against Bayley. So it's just interesting seeing her slightly shift on this episode now that she's in a feud with Becky.
The big tag title match. Is this the biggest women's tag title match of all time? Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez against Lyra Valkyria and Bayley. The announcers were just perplexed all match long. How can Lyra and Bayley, they don't even know if they should be teaming together. How could they become champions? So Raquel clotheslines Bayley from the apron. The audience was not reacting too much for this. There's a guillotine leg drop onto Perez, but she kicks out. And then Perez goes to get lifted for a fisherman buster. Michael Cole believes it's going to be the Nightwing. And then it's Lyra with the Liger bomb. And Bayley instead wants to tag. So she doesn't go for the cover, hits the elbow. Raquel then is in to save. Dominic distracts Bayley. So Lyra ducks and Raquel with the weakest looking kick knocks Dom down. And Dom is calling for medical attention. And we get our trainer, AJ Styles, in his latest outfit change of the night, who tries to give Dom CPR.
Yeah, as a trainer. Mm-hmm.
Becky appears. She's been under the ring this whole time, yanks Lyra off the apron, and Bayley has no one to tag. She hits the Bayley to belly onto Perez, but a blind tag was made by Raquel, who comes in and hits the Tejana bomb from behind, pinning Bayley, whose losing streak continues and might set up another title match for her next week as the champions retain.
She just has to ask. That's all she needs to do.
You just have to, you know, just write it down. There's a lot of segments to fill.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought the match was great. You know, I think Raquel and Roxanne are really gelling together as a team, and I hate to say it, but I like this team more than I do Liv and Raquel. Raquel, I think, now is being well-utilized as a giant in these matches, and I think Roxanne is just amazing. She's fantastic. I think Bayley and Lyra were great, too. I actually kind of would love to see this match again, but obviously I feel like the effort here is to turn Lyra further babyface, but I was also hoping for a little bit of resolution for exactly why Bayley was wanting this tag team. I know they'll probably explain it maybe next week, but it kind of feels like the thing that maybe demands explanation on the night of, you know, after the match.
It's one thing if they were still friends and Bayley got this shot and Lyra is too focused on her bigger match and it's furthering this rift. But like, we've already done the whole split between these two. There's nothing for Lyra to feel bad about not being there to make the tag or the fact that Bayley lost. So yeah, I guess this does require some kind of explanation afterwards that we will see if we get or not. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's nothing for Lyra to have to like apologize for or care about. It's like, I already don't like this person.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Jackie interviews the returning Sami Zayn, who 2 weeks ago was gone indefinitely and is back. Ribs are taped up. He's not 100%. I found this one to be odd because we've got this whole month of Dominic not being cleared. Why is this guy cleared?
You got to ask the medical professionals.
Weird standards that they have. So he could have waited, but Cross is getting in the way of my goals. I could have been in the gauntlet last week. So I'm going to take care of this tonight. Dom is busy looking for AJ Styles when Balor and JD show up, and Pierce is pissed and threatens to strip him of the title if he doesn't go get checked for medical. Sami Zayn, Karrion Kross. Zayn hit a Arabian press. Scarlett would kick him in the ribs, and that was the attack by Kross on the ribs throughout. We come back from break, and all these fans have their phones out with the lights on. I didn't quite understand. Was this just, were they bored? What was going on?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so there's a doomsday Saito onto Zayn. Zayn comes back with a tornado and then a sunset bomb when Scarlett gets the pipe. Sounds like I'm playing Clue here. It's Miss Scarlett with the pipe at the Toyota Arena. And she hands it to Cross after an exploder. And as Zayn goes for a haluva kick, Scarlett grabs the leg to prevent the haluva kick. The ref goes to admonish Scarlett, so Cross uses the pipe to the ribs of Sami Zayn and pins him in 10 minutes and 4 seconds. Cross, I think on the exploder, got like his nose busted open here because he had blood all over it. And then he just leaned it. He smeared it all over his face and then kissed Scarlett. And it's like, cool. That's thanks for getting blood all over me. Look kind of
these guys are all so desperate to be able to use blood, you know, like it's just,
yes,
you can tell.
Yeah. Yes. I scratched the inside of my nose on that fall. And yeah, Cross is busted open. And how could we end the segment without just say it, Sammy? Just say it.
Yeah. This is another trilogy we're building towards, you know.
Jesus, is that the whole premise of Raw? We're just 50-50 and we'll do the deciding match down the road.
It kind of feels like it's a Levesque, you know, specialty at this point. Triple threat matches and then rubber matches building to a third in a trilogy. I thought the match was made more enjoyable with like a really good underdog performance from Zayn. The rest of it, I still find to be a pretty average pro wrestling heel type of match. I mean, I know Cross is doing great work in his promos online, in ring. Nothing really stands out to me. So most interesting though is the fact that there was a dueling chant here for Karrion Kross. There was a "Let's go Cross, let's go Sammy" 50-50 chant, and maybe it's not surprising because Cross is doing so well, but I guess like if you told me that it would be the same level of support as a Sami Zayn would get, that would probably surprise me. And I wonder what that necessarily says. Does it make Sami look bad that he isn't able to get equal support than somebody who's not even effectively pushed as a babyface, but is, you know, this sort of crowd supported, you know,
he's a hot babyface online and he's a average heel on television. That's the balancing act, right?
Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, this is obviously their attempt at trying to do something interesting with Cross by pushing him into an actual feud with back and forth matches. We'll see if they can translate this sort of online, you know, just like love that these people have into something that works on television. Like something tells me he's going to end up winning this feud. I'm fine with that. Listening to the online audience and pushing a character that they love. I guess I just don't know if I love that it's at the expense of Sami Zayn.
We are right now in an era where we are straddling the two.
Oh my God.
But we are.
Oh, sorry.
The looping is just torturous.
Should I leave the loop on? Mm. Anyway. this one just, it felt like very out of place to me, just that they did this whole thing with Sammy. He's gone indefinitely, and then boom, he's just back. And it was, I guess it was explained, but it just felt very awkward. Just that, like, he's taken out with this big injury angle. He's back. He's losing again. You know, the match was what it was. I'm with you. Like, it does kind of feel as though they're...
I could see SummerSlam being the blow-off, or at least being the third match between the two.
Yeah. I mean, we'll go through the SummerSlam card at the end. I mean, I know it's two nights, but this card is filling up. I don't know if this one... This might be one of your TVs. The trainer... Okay. The trainer comes out of the office to tell Adam Pearce and AJ that they still have to wait for the results of the medical. I was waiting for them to say that there's still too much swelling and they can't do the MRI yet. But then Dominic jumps AJ from behind, announces he's cleared, and he'll see him at SummerSlam. Was this trainer, like, in on this with Dominic? How did this happen? He's been cleared,
maybe,
but this trainer, like, lied to them.
Could be. And is that a tub of Lego in the back?
It is.
I wonder what for.
Well, I'm trying to put the pieces together of this segment, and I'm coming up empty.
Okay.
Like, I was very confused by this. It's like, there was this trainer, like, working with Dominic, and if so, that should have been made clear, because this made no sense.
I think medicine just works very differently in the WWE universe. The way law works very differently in the WWE universe.
Maybe this was like that Christopher Nolan film, Memento, okay? Where we were going backwards, okay? It was first he had attacked him, and then we were going back when he was awaiting the results.
Okay, whatever.
I'm giving way too much leeway. We got our match, Dominic and AJ at SummerSlam. Io Sky against Stephanie Vaquer. Now, Michael Cole congratulates JC Jane at the beginning of this match on becoming a double champion, and then says, I'm not trying to pick on him, I'm just recapping. He says, you know, TNA, they had a great show last night in Bridgeport. They were in Long Island, New York.
Oh, oops. So,
separate states, but Bridgeport. a lot of cities out there. Sky hits his suicide dive, tries for the acai moonsault, but Vaquer stops her, hits a high cross to the floor. Vaquer, this might have been during the commercial, so people might not have seen it, but I was live at this point. Vaquer did this submission where it was like when you would do a side Russian leg sweep, but she put on a cross face from a standing position and trapped the leg. And this submission looked really cool. And then Sky just broke it by back body dropping her. Sky then gets her in her own crossface, hits the acai moonsault to the floor. Vaquer blocks a sunset bomb and delivers a knee to the throat, and then hits the devil's kiss on the edge of the apron, rolls into the middle of the ring, and continues with another devil's kiss. Now, up until this point of the show, like, there have been some moments that the crowd had reacted to certain things, but I thought overall, for 14,000, whatever it was, like, I thought this was a fairly subdued crowd. When this devil's kiss hit, this place just all of a sudden, they all woke up and they went nuts for the rest of this. And they were really hot for the final segment afterwards. But to me, the turning point was this devil's kiss this late in the show, where it felt like a different audience had been transplanted into the Toyota Center.
Well, it tells you what a great job they've done of building hype for this match. And I mean, really, it's Booker T that you still have to credit it all to, don't you?
Well, they also, like, they had these two had a really good match here. Io then comes back and hits the bullet train attack, goes for over the moonsault, but is stopped. And then Stephanie Vaquer hits the inverted superplex. I thought she was about to break Io's neck. This was very frightening looking, but maybe not one for the we bust this out for the big matches, not the Raw match that was set up 2 hours ago. But the crowd reacted nonetheless. And then the Secret Hervis come out. Fire and Niven distract as Chelsea Green jumps Vaquer from behind, and we get the DQ, 15 minutes and 5 seconds. But up until that point, hell of a match that I thought these two had. Io Sky is probably the best performer in WWE at the moment.
Yeah, I think
male or female, I would argue.
And I don't know if Stephanie Vaquer is that far behind.
These two were great, and this was a pretty cold match. Like, they hadn't built this up. It was just thrown out there, and they had a Tremendous match.
It's hot because they're the two best female wrestlers in the entire company. And just the announcement that they're going to be wrestling tonight was probably enough to elicit that reaction. They're kind of burning it out a little bit, you know, by giving us two DQ finishes now, but a lot of ring time between the two. I think they're probably so sure that the ring quality is going to be so strong between the two that the audiences are going to be satisfied, even with the DQ. And I think they're probably right. You know, the in-ring was so strong that if there's some sort of promise of their next match, let's say it's a pay-per-view match or even a TV match, where it's going to have a finish, I'm there. I want to see these two wrestle. I can watch a best of 10. Or 11 with these two.
So Io comes back, hits Chelsea with a missile dropkick, and they go to fight off the Secret Hervis when Naomi appears, shoves Sky into Vicaire from behind and just like shoved her with all her might. And then the heels are pouncing on them and Rhea Ripley appears. Crowd goes nuts for Ripley. She takes out Naomi with a riptide, and then Chelsea is hit with a riptide as well. So the three baby faces who will be... Well, the three baby faces were left here standing in the center as we've got, Rhea and Io in the match at SummerSlam and Vicaire getting the winner at Clash in Paris.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's always nice to, like, do these sort of great spotlights on, like, who are the top stars in the company and to put all the stars together in this, like, Avengers-style shot, which, like, Levesque has utilized a lot with the women in the past, both in NXT and also now on the main roster. I think it's always effective to, like, increase the amount of star power and to make the show feel like it's got a lot of stars on it.
And maybe we get six-woman tag next week just on the go-home show that you could do with the
I think
Secret
they
Hervis
should or... they should pick two of them and go for the tag team championships.
That's also the option. You could do both next week.
Yeah, whatever. Just do it like, you know, like...
You've got 2.5 hours of this show. You can work multiple times.
Sure, yeah.
And then our final segment, Paul Heyman comes out with Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. He says, I've got a lot to get off my chest before Roman comes out. And with that, his music hits and out comes Roman. He does his Sandman entrance for about an hour and gets into the ring. The crowd is chanting asshole at Heyman, and they would shut down Heyman whenever he went to speak. This went on forever. Heyman then announces Seth Rollins will be out of action for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The swelling went down, and they have determined a long time, just as Seth diagnosed himself last week.
Still no, like, official. I mean, I think at this point, maybe they're through with, like, trying to even feed the machine. They're just like, Rollins said what he said on the Rich Eisen show, which they did not replay, interestingly enough, on the show.
They didn't mention anything beyond this Heyman comment that mm-hmm. it does feel that they are making Rollins like
the less
not out of mind, but out of sight. And I would imagine they're probably not even going to bring up Rollins again if they're going to do this, in fact, at SummerSlam, which mm-hmm. they could always change that idea. But like the idea here was not to put a ton of attention onto Seth, but they did mention the line that he's expected to be gone.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know at this point what they're thinking is, but they're probably also thinking, hey, like the work is kind of done. Let the audience think what they're going to think, and we're going to do it, whatever we're going to do when we do it.
Yeah, there's enough that people are like, I would imagine the vast majority of people are mm-hmm. believing that he hurt himself on Saturday night's main event. Like, I think it's probably a very small percentage that are following it to the level of, you know,
mm-hmm.
listening to Wei Ting and John Pollock. It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, Rewind Away goes back to review the best of the WWF Volume 16. We'll also have reviews of UFC 318, TNA Slammiversary, a special Ask Away edition, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. Heyman continues, and he says that with Rollins gone, there's a leadership void, and he pitches Reigns coming to join him, Breakker, and Bronson Reed, stating, I love you, my tribal chief. And he puts his finger in the air. Reigns says, well, you're not a wise man anymore. You're just a dumbass. Ooh.
Shit.
Oh, man.
Man, Netflix censors did not catch that one. Did you notice?
I guess there are certainly more clever options for an insult to go from wise man
He liked this one. He just hit the button over and over. Okay. He warns Braun that when Heyman is done with you, he'll do the same thing to you. And he says that Heyman's going to take all the credit and says the only reason that I'm still the tribal chief is because they still acknowledge me. Heyman, you had a part in me winning that title, but the reason I kept it wasn't because of you. I mean, look at you. Fat shame this guy. He credits the Usos, Solo, and Zayn for helping him keep the title as long as he did. And then I went home to raise the future bloodline because Paul thought we were just another faction, just another wrestling group, but we're a family. We are God's work. Which, when this bloodline comes together, the babyface reunion, that's got to be the name of the new group. God's work.
Oh,
I love it. Think of the merchandise.
You're speaking of like Roman's kids. Is that what you're saying?
No, I meant like the Usos and Solo and Sammy if they ever came back together. But yeah, maybe the next kids, he's got what, five of them?
Five kids, two sets of twins. Can you imagine?
Yes.
Oh my
God. God's work. That's actually a great like name for a finisher or a group.
Faction, yeah. God's Eye.
Yeah, Stardom.
Great name.
It's already taken up. Mm-hmm. Rain says, we made Paul part of our family, and you threw it all away for a best friend that didn't even speak to you for 10 years. You ruined the bloodline, and Braun finally steps up to Roman, and he speaks. He says, I don't want you here anymore. You're the old dog. Your prime was 5 years ago. I was like, man, 5 years ago was only like 2020. It's not that long ago.
In many ways, it is, you know.
I guess so. But
yeah.
Yeah. He says, you're taking up a spot standing in this ring. He says, Paul won't stab me in the back because I hold value here. You are worthless. I'm the big dog now. I'm the future of WWE. So do what you do best and leave. And Reigns just stands there and says, I didn't hear anything you just said. Maybe your mic didn't work. Take mine. As he hands the mic to Braun, Braun foolishly takes this mic. I was hoping he was going to repeat the promo, but no, it is a decoy so that he could spear Braun hit him with a Superman punch, and the brawl erupts. Reed and Braun eventually get control, and as they set up for the tsunami, now Jey Uso decides, I think it's time. And he comes out, fights off Reed and Breaker. The God's work hit double spears, and we get Jey and Roman standing tall at the end of the show. And while not announced, this definitely felt like they are going the tag direction for SummerSlam. That was my thought at the end of it.
Feels that way to me. I mean, otherwise, I think they would have put a lot more attention into like a Jey feud with Bronson Reed or something. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, that match just doesn't really have that much juice. Whereas I think the tandem of Roman teaming with Jey does feel pretty big. You know,
they were leaning very heavily towards doing like Reigns and Braun in this segment. But yeah, by the end of it, it feels
they're
like
the leaders of their teams. And I can see that being a match beyond SummerSlam. But for now, with this sort of association, I'm just sensing tag team. You know, it's still quite novel to me to hear Roman Reigns speak as a babyface by himself on the microphone. And it's interesting to see like how he's been able to adapt like the whole tribal chief tone of voice into a babyface promo. Here he pretty much did a sort of like, I'm here because of you fans type of promo, you know, in without exactly those words. But it was still unusual for me to see like the tribal chief Roman Reigns be so like fan friendly, but I think he's doing overall a good job of it. They're making him look, you know, like sort of like a wise guy, not a dumbass, you know, a wise guy. That the whole dumbass thing was maybe a little bit cringeworthy, but it seemed to work with this crowd. And overall, he still effectively feels like the biggest star by far on this entire show.
Yeah. I thought this was a very lengthy segment to get to where we got. You know, the audience seemed to be into it for the most part, but I thought, you know, Roman talking for a long time, I mean, it is a little,
it's the entrance, it's, you know, it's all the pausing.
Yes. Yeah. This one went like, those are like 20 minutes all together for, I'm the big dog.
They're on rock time, you know, it seems, for these segments now.
I guess so.
Yeah.
your feelings overall of tonight's Raw?
Yeah,
the penultimate edition of Raw before SummerSlam. It
feels
like
a very rushed build towards SummerSlam.
Totally rushed.
That's because they've got so much other shows that they've been building up to, of course, right? But on paper, I think the matches are sensible and they make sense. They just maybe are lacking in a bit of a sort of more deeper, like, hatred and deeper sort of, like, heat, I would say. But you're getting all the stars on the show. This show itself, I thought, had some... To me, like, it's interesting because I think the highlights of the WWE continue to be the women. You know, both obviously coming off of Evolution to that first entire hour last week being dedicated to the women. This show, I thought, you know, it was the women shining the brightest in Io and Stephanie Baker. And then you had
they woke up the crowd, and Rhea got this monster reaction coming out as well. Like, to me, that was the high point of the show. I don't know what your overall thought. Like, I was much more down on this episode of Raw. I felt it was, you know, not just like certain elements of like the crowd, but I just found for a lot of these stories, like just these giant gaps that I found to be just a lot of logic holes that you don't typically see as glaring, like just a lot of like little things to me that I don't know, just added up for me on this show. And part of it is, I think this is like a rapid turnaround for SummerSlam. Like, it's going to be two very, very big shows for the company, but it's just, I would like a little more time for like Punk and Gunther to breathe, to get to that, mm-hmm. Like, that's a really big match, and we've got one more episode before they're at the show.
Want to go through what's been announced so far?
Yeah, so without the Roman match, the Roman match would make 10 that they have now with the updated list. But we have Cena Rhodes, which is now a street fight. Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill for the women's title. Randy Orton and Mr. Roll against Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. Gunther, CM Punk for the world heavyweight title. Naomi, Rhea Ripley, and Io Sky for the women's world title. Becky Lynch, Lyra Valkyria, no DQ, no count out, last chance match for the Intercontinental Championship in the biggest women's Intercontinental title match of all time. The Judgment Day against Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, your number one contenders who have outlasted the field to earn a championship shot. Steel cage match between Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. Dominic against AJ, and then we'll pencil in tag match with Roman and Jey Uso against Braun and Braun.
Yeah, I would expect more matches than the 10 to be announced. I mean, just to go by. Well, this is the first time they've done a two-nighter, but SummerSlam last year was at least 7 matches, so...
I think we'll end up getting something with the SmackDown tag titles on this show that could get set up. We do have the title defense by the Wyatts against Andrade and Phoenix on Friday. They could set something up there. I would think by the end of this week, we probably have the whole card, if not, we're pretty close to it as we see. So what they break it up to. I mean, are there any, I guess you have Zane and Cross. Do they find their way onto this card? I mean, that's, sure. I guess,
you can always do the Raw Tag Team Championships as well with JD and Balor defending.
Yeah, if you want to fill it out, like you certainly have those kind of matches that are typically reserved for TV that, I mean, if you needed to fill them up, like quite honestly, with WWE pacing, like I have no doubt that they could do 5 matches on each night and still end up with a 4-hour show. I mean, that is...
I don't think they will. It just doesn't seem like what they do for the stadium shows. But
yeah, and they are listing this show for like 4 hours with a 6 p.m. start time. So okay. I could see like a couple more thrown in here. But there you go. That is the SummerSlam card. And that was the penultimate edition. Way we're almost there. We've almost arrived at SummerSlam.
Does it feel like you're on the road to SummerSlam?
The highway to hell? No, we're on like the speed bump to Jersey.
We're in the express lane.
We are in the express lane. Yeah. And we're cruising. All right, well, we have some feedback to get to, and if Wei wants to share any more life events, that's all going to happen behind the Post-Wrestling Cafe. So that is where we are jumping onto. If you're here on YouTube before your way out, make sure you hit subscribe, and you will be up to date on all the shows we drop here on the YouTube channel. Check out the NWA podcast from Sunday night if you've got 6 hours and 8 minutes of spare time to listen to them discuss all the issues going on in professional wrestling. Up next is coming up on Tuesday night with Braden and Davey, and then Wednesday, Wei Ting and Kate from Montreal covering the G1 shows. We've got a special Pollock and Thurston. We're going to be joined by Lavi Margolin on the show this Wednesday. And then Wednesday night, we have Rewind to Dynamite. And of course, folks, go search out the best of the WWF volume 16. Okay. We're going to be traveling to Japan. We're going to be traveling to Puerto Rico. We're going to be going to Italy, and we're going to be going to France. Many, many places, all coming with me and Gene Okerlund costumes to accompany each ethnicity. And we will see WWF in 1988 and how, what cultural, tributes they pay to all of these various regions of the world. That will be encompassed on Rewind Away, number 187 this week. All right. Goodbye, YouTube.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.